Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
Time to talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. Again, if you've got football questions, you can start texting those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Hello, John.
Hello, guys. Anything happened today?
Well, some guy named Mahomes, I guess, has got a lot of money coming to him. Uh-huh. I'm trying to, maybe we need you to decipher this, John, because I'm reading these tweets from Adam Schefter. It says, final Patrick Mahomes deal, 10-year extension worth up to $503 million, and it includes $477 million in guarantee mechanisms and the ability for Mahomes to have outs if guarantee mechanisms aren't exercised. Make sense of that for us. What does that mean?
To make sense of it, and again, don't everybody just stay away from the guarantee part of it, because again, I mean, you can see that it's not going to be $500 million of guarantees. What this basically is, is that, you know, he'll get a signing bonus this year, and then I'm sure there's probably a series like about three, four, or five option bonuses in the future to try to readjust, because ultimately, you know, you don't want to get $15 million, 15% of the cap, more than 15% of the cap, but also you have to make judgments as far as, okay, what's the cap going to be? And so you don't know next year's cap, although it's going to probably stay about the same, and then the year after that is not going to be as big. But you know, when the big TV contracts come in 2022, that's when you're going to see a big jump, because I think there's supposed to be about a 50% increase in the TV revenue, which right now is about 7.7. So that should probably take it up to 11, you know, and get the cap to make a big jump into the 220s. And so what you're going to see is probably just a series of mechanisms that will be option bonuses, or it's just like we've seen with, you know, Russell Wilson and stuff, and other players. It's like it's a bonus if you're still on the roster at a certain date. And so to try to make things work cap wise is going to be done like that. And so, and of course, there's injury guarantees, which really don't count as guarantees, because unless you're injured, you're not going to get the money. But, you know, it's going to be one that's going to be, it's done well because Lee Steinberg did it. And I'm sure that it's a great deal. And, you know, you think about this, it's like, oh, so does that take the market up to $50 million? No, it doesn't at all. What it does, it just basically is a $40 million deal that pretty much takes care of him most of the rest of his career. So, like, think about this. Let's say that we'll just play it right down the middle, that Dak Prescott agrees to a $35 million a year contract and does it for 4 years. Well, he could have one more contract and possibly two by the time Mahomes is done. And what we also don't know is that if this 10-year deal really kind of starts in 2022. So it's one where I'm sure his cap number is going to, you know, go up a little bit this year. It'll probably go down a little bit next year, and or stay what it's supposed to be with the fifth-year option. But in the end, he's paid, and they've taken care of the most important player maybe in the league, but certainly on their team.
John, how many years until it looks like a steal what they're paying Patrick Mahomes?
I'd say, well, look, I mean, 5 years, because, you know, because that's when, you know, like, here's Dak Prescott right now, you know, trying to get 35 in or more. You know, Deshaun Watson's probably going to get 39 to 40, and each of those guys are going to get one more contract, at least, if they are done. So you figure, okay, if you're already down below the $40 million level, you know, that next level is going to be in the 50 to 55 range as far as, you know, just real money and all that. So, yeah, I'd say four years or so, it'll be 4 or 5 years, it'll be outdated. But, you know, again, when all these guys start getting their next contracts.
Well, John, okay, so you talk about Lee Steinberg and probably a good deal for both Mahomes and the Chiefs. Do you think he would have been better served, though, to just go for the five-year deal since he's only 24 years old right now?
Again, waiting to see, because, I mean, really what you're looking at, it still could turn out to be a five-year deal, because if the options aren't guaranteed, I mean, and you know how the Seahawks do their options, you know, they'll go to 5 days after the end of the season, after the Super Bowl, and it's like, okay, if you're still on the roster, you get the bonus or the option bonus, and so You know, it's one that you know, you can still break it if necessary if you don't exercise that option. So, but you know, I think what it comes down to is that they had to try to put a $40 million deal plus, because let's just assume his value is 40, right? Which is everybody expected. You knew with a flat cap next year and unknown cap in 2022 that how do you try to work around that so he can get paid? And so that's what they've done, getting the flexibility of doing a deal that, works, that you can maneuver it and, hit it and all that stuff. And so, it had to be light at the beginning of it because of they only have $6.2 million of cap room as we speak. And they're still trying to see if they can do something with Chris Jones, the defensive tackle, who wants $20.1 million a year. So that's a problem. But in the end, I think it'll work out. It'll be light, and it'll be very backloaded.
John, again, you guys can text in your questions. We'll get to some of those coming up. 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, if you've got football questions for John Clayton. But, John, is this, to borrow a title from the old Brock and Salk show, is this good news, bad news, or no news for Dak Prescott?
I honestly think it's no news, because I still look at the fact that, and again, this is where the maneuvering has to be done. I think Dak's in a great spot to get some kind of a deal, but if he thinks that that's going to take it over $40 million, well, he's crazy, because right now, if you can get something because what he's looking at, and this is where he's got a little bit of an advantage over Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, his cap number next year on the second franchise is, $37.7 million. And if you combine what he's making right now, that means he's basically if they get past the 15th, he's on a two-year deal at 34 and change. Okay. So that's kind of where, Jerry Jones is with their offer. But what Jerry needs to do, because, since 2013, the cap's gone up $10 million a year, okay? Well, that's not happening. And they've got seven other players with a combined cap number of $106 million on next year's salary cap, which is going to stay flat or go down. If you have to put $37.7 in that, that's $143 million, is going to be tied up on eight players. I mean, you can't even field a team. Certainly, you can rework some contracts and do some extensions, but my read on it is if they go ahead and get him to the franchise tag, they're probably going to have to cut Amari Cooper, which they don't want to do. They probably have to cut their right tackle, the little Collins, and who owns what else? Because they need to get a cap number of about $28 million, not $37.7 million, knowing that you're losing on two different ends. You don't get the $10 million increase, and you're also sitting $6 million more than what he's making this year.
You know, I wasn't going to ask this question from the 253 because it always leads to a debate as to whether or not Snacks Harrison has been retired or not. Yeah. But the 253 says, Professor, is there still any run-stuffing defensive tackles out there on the market that the Hawks could sign?
Well, Damon Harrison looks like he still wants to play, but again, we're going to see with a bunch of these players. I'm just totaling it up. There's about 28 players right now that have been to the Pro Bowl that haven't been signed. Okay, they're still on the street, 28. Wow. Ziggy Ansah, who's been to one Pro Bowl. Larry Warford, the guard from the Saints cut. And, you got Jadeveon Clowney, and, you got all these different guys. And so, my read on it is, it's like, okay, well, first, you'd like to be able to get a physical with them. You can't do that. But I think what it comes down to is just kind of the waiting game to see what you can do. But the run-stopping defensive tackles, and again, they may all take the position. It's like, I'm not going to go in to the start of training camp and get the virus and do this and this and this. I'd rather wait toward the end. We'll see if that's going to be the tact, because that could be the tact that Clowney might be taking. But in the end, the run-stopping defensive tackles, Damon Harrison, who still looks like he can be convinced into playing. Then you've got Marcell Dareus. You've got Mike Daniels, who's been to one Pro Bowl for the Green Bay Packers. And you got Tim Jernigan, whose deal fell apart on a one-year, $3.25 million deal with the Houston Texans.
Professor, I'm looking at Russell Wilson's contract. It runs out in 2023. He'll be 34 years old at that point. Do you think we're going to be looking at perhaps $45, $50 million if he continues to play the way that he has?
Yeah, and that's another sign that at some point you know, the Mahomes contract will be a little bit outdated, and you know, we'll see how backloaded it is. Because again, if they take a lot out of the front, then you know that number could be, you know, big toward the back of the deal. But of course, the back of the deal, because we haven't seen one like this since Dave Wyman's best friend Brian Bosworth did the 10-year deal when he came into the league from the supplemental draft. But no, I think that you know, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, in the end, Dak and Russell could ultimately make more than Mahomes, just from the standpoint that you know, they have one or two more deals left in them.
John, as far as what's going on in Washington with the potential team name change, what do you think they will change it? And B, what's going on with the minority owners that have said, "All right, we're done with Daniel Snyder. We don't want to be associated with him anymore." Is that because he's considering a team name change? Or he hasn't in the past, or he's just a jerk? What's going on?
He will change the name. I think the way you saw the phrasing last Friday of the way he said that I'm under thorough investigation as far as the name, and I've talked to Roger Goodell and people in the league, and we've been doing this for the last couple of weeks. He has no choice but to change the name. I mean, for several reasons. You know, you got all the sponsorships starting to lose. FedEx, you know, they have $205 million in 20 years on that deal with naming rights of the stadium. You have you know, the situation with Pepsi. You have Nike. They've pulled out. You can see that now the Redskin apparel is no longer starting to even go into Target and some of the stores nationwide, Walgreens. And so that's bad. Then the other thing, he's trying to get a new stadium in D.C., and the mayor and the people that are doing the stadium says, well, we're not going to get you anything for a stadium if you keep the Redskin name. So he has no choice. He has to change the name, and he has to change it very quickly to get it done before the start of the season. But I think it's safe to say what's ever happened in the last year, you know, particularly, you know, with his relationship with these, because Fred Smith and he were really tight. You know, Fred Smith, of course, is a minority owner. He's one of the three minority owners that eat up 40% of the ownership. But he's Fred X, and he's the one who gave him the $205 million for the stadium naming rights, which, of course, that's a, you know, that's a 20-year deal. So I think in the end, there, I think, you know, some discomfort probably in their relationships. They want out. They're having a hard time finding anybody to buy in. And that even puts Dan Snyder in a position, does he still want to continue owning the team, you know, with all that's going on? I'm sure a new stadium in D.C. would allow him to start to do that. But he has to start thinking about, you know, where the things have been. The fans are down on him. You know, it's, what, 79% attendance last year as far as capacity. You know, people aren't showing up at the games. You know, the team's terrible. They've had so many front office changes. They had to change coaches this year. So, I mean, he loves the game of football, but right now the franchise is a mess.
Why are they having a hard time finding somebody to take that ownership stake? Is it because of the stadium situation? Is it because people don't want to be associated with him? Because it feels like that's just a money-making machine. Yeah. I mean, that thing's worth billions, that franchise. Most of them are. So Why would they have a hard time with that?
Well, just like you said, I mean, it prints money, even though they don't have full attendance, and so it can't be a money issue, because I think what they're the third highest ranked franchise as far as value. I think what they're worth, $5 billion. I mean, it's not as big as Dallas and New England, but it's, you know, right up there in the number three hole. So money wise, they're fine. So it has to be relationship-wise or arguments that has happened over the last couple of years as far as the direction of the team. And so, you know, they're bailing out. And one of the things that I think you have to read into this is that why are they having problems selling? Well, it's not because it's the revenue. It's a matter that probably some of the people don't want to be aligned with Dan Snyder. They're coming in.
Yeah. Have you had much interaction with him, John? Because I've heard nothing but bad things about him.
He likes my commercial. I know that. The ESPN commercial.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, he always comes over and he says that. I still remember when I was president of the Pro Football Writers that we had a big battle for a whole year, because what he wanted to do was shorten the press box. He wanted to put a United suite and a couple other suites in there at the expense of the Washington Times. They wanted to move them down into a basement where they have to watch the game by TV set, and they were going to eliminate a lot of people that are writers in the area that could attend the game. So I had to battle him on that all year, and then I had a good enough relationship then that ultimately he came to our side and didn't make those changes. So that worked out. But you know, that was like the only battles I had. And then of course you'll appreciate this one. You know, he I was at the AFC Championship game in Oakland, you know, back in, what was it, 2002, and I get a call from Carl Swanson, his PR guy. And so he says, hey, Dan wants to talk to you on Monday. Can you? We'll give you a call. It's like, okay, fine. So Dan calls up, and he knows I was a good friend and a contact with Marty Schottenheimer. And so he calls me up, and he says, hey, John, I just want to let you know I'm firing your buddy Marty Schottenheimer, and you can write it. It's like, oh, okay. So after 1 year, he fires Marty Schottenheimer. So he says, I'm calling up to tell you I'm firing your buddy. Weird, but...
Hey, here's something else that's weird, John. The 49ers signed Jamar Taylor today. Why?
Well, because they had another Jones fracture. Tez Tabor, who's a cornerback that they signed last year, just a backup, gets a Jones fracture. So that's now four injuries they've had. And technically, they lost another guy, DJ Reed, a cornerback, because he got a pectoral injury. So now they got two Jones fractures, two cornerbacks down, and two receivers down. So they needed another cornerback, and so what they did is that they went to get one of the more veteran slot guys they can get, and that's why. And again, they have a great slot guy in Kawan Williams, but he's in the last year of his contract, and it's probably going to get a big deal to go someplace else. But when you're down two cornerbacks, you got to go sign somebody.
John, the 360 says, Professor, my wife and I took a gamble 2 months ago and bought tickets to the Dolphins game in Miami. Will it happen?
It should. I mean, again, I can't speak on the second wave, but based on the current waves, you know, it looks like they're still going to go off on time. And I would have to think again. I can't speak on the second wave, but as of right now, everything's planned for the regular season to start on time. Now, the only thing that could be a little bit of an adjustment, and I don't know how this fits with Seattle and Miami, probably doesn't, but you know, if college football doesn't start at the beginning of the year, and even if it's moved back to the fall or move back to spring, then I think you're going to see some flex games come in, because I think the NFL could get a little bit more money moving some Sunday games to Saturday. And if that's the case, I don't know. It wouldn't affect, I think, Seattle and Miami, because that's nobody's going to be wanting to go see the Miami Dolphins in that. But right now, it's still on.
Hey, John, with the name changes, we know the Cleveland Indians possibly going to change. What about Kansas City Chiefs? The 206 wants to know. Are they safe?
Not really, no. I mean, they could be under scrutiny, too. I mean, again, it depends on what the franchise feels. Remember, the Indians surprised everybody by putting out when nobody was knowing that it was going to happen, that they're making a consideration. You know, the Redskins were forced, basically, to make it because of the monetary situations, and the Chiefs have not reacted other than to get a deal done with Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, they, the Braves, and maybe a few others have to make some considerations and making some change. But you know, the Chiefs, it's not 100% that they can want to stay the Chiefs.
Hey, John, there's a story, NFL.com, by Adam Rank talking about the Vikings and Mike Zimmer being in his contract year. He's not really on a hot seat, though, is he?
I think he is, yeah. I mean, I think that he may get a little bit of a pass because of the fact that, you know, they had to let four starters on defense go, and, you know, they had to trade Stephon Diggs because he didn't want to be there, and, you know, had all the difficulties. And so they're still a good enough team that they should win 9 or 10 games. But if they have a bad year, I mean, he's on a hot seat. There's no doubt, because, the window shrunk a little bit for their playoffs and Super Bowl runs and all that stuff, which happens now every 3 to 4 years, because all of a sudden some of the guys get older, some of the guys get paid too much, and you can't keep everybody. You know, they did a good job of readjusting, but no, I think he's on the hot seat.
John, I'm seeing that the Patriots are offering free parking for home games during this season. Are we going to be seeing this in every city where they're trying to do something different for every fan base? That I know the Giants, are one of the teams out there that told their season ticket holders, hey, you don't have to buy tickets this year. You'll still have your tickets the following season. It feels like each franchise is trying to do something, I guess, a little bit unique or different to help out the fans.
Yeah, because they realize the economics of the way things are, and you know they're not going to be able to get a lot of the revenue back. And, you know, trying to at least appeal to the fans. I mean, most teams, I think, are going to take the tact that they're going to, you can opt out of your season tickets this year and make one or two decisions whether you want to put it into next year's. You'll still keep your priority on the season ticket list, or you can get the refund now. I think you're seeing more teams doing that. But also, you know, that does allow them to start to shrink the list if they do have some people in the stands to say, okay, how do we, which ones do we pick to go? Because that's going to anger, if you are keeping your tickets and you want to see the games this year, you're going to want to be at the stadium. And, you know, a lot of people aren't going to do it because, you know, at the best, what are you going to see, 25%, 30% capacity? And there's still a chance that you may see none. I mean, Buffalo, for example, has pretty much said, hey, the way things are going right now, it's a none. And so you can see that probably happening in a lot of cities. But, you know, I think it's one where, you know, they're just trying to be as accommodating as they can. I mean, the Patriots are first to come out and basically say, hey, if you want your money back, we'll give your money back, but we'll still keep you on the priority list at the same spot.
Hey, John, just off the top of your head, maybe you have a database for this, but as far as, like, best free agents that are still out there, so Clowney, Everson, Griffin, mm-hmm. I guess, just to name a
well,
couple.
You know, it's
of,
funny because let's start who, off
who's
here.
The most likely to sign? Go ahead.
Well, again, not if it's going to take a couple weeks. I saw that the Raiders, you know, put in an offer, but it was a lowball offer on Clowney. But again, there's five Pro Bowlers on the defensive line. You know, you've heard nothing on Ziggy Ansah. You still have Michael Venn at 34. He hasn't got, and these are all Pro Bowl guys. Michael Jadeveon Clowney. You know, you got Marcell Dareus and Everson Griffin. They're among the best, but clearly Clowney's the best that's out there at this stage. You still have Devontae Freeman at running back that's still available. Then you got Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon, Demaryius Thomas. You know, he's out there. I mean, you got Larry Warford at guard, three-time Pro Bowler. You got two old left tackles in Donald Penn and Jason Peters. You know, they're still out there. There's some talk that, you know, Peters may end up going back to the Eagles. You know, we mentioned Mike Daniels. He's a Pro Bowler. He's been there. And then Bontez Berfic, Clay Matthews, Terrell Suggs, who's 37 years old. So there's a lot of players right now that haven't had homes, and they're waiting. You got a safety like Rashad Jones, a two-time Pro Bowler, sitting out there.
Professor,
by the way, I did work on my database.
Oh, nice work there, Clayton. Holy smokes! I just thought one or two, and yeah, that was great.
John, the funniest thing I heard today was Cam Newton on Instagram saying, "I'm getting tired of being humble." He doesn't strike me as being a humble guy. And then he came out with, he compared himself to a lion, and when a lion roars, everything stops, and I'm about to roar. I suppose on the one hand, if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm excited about, yeah, I got the cocky Cam Newton coming to town. On the other hand, I'm thinking, oh, I'm not so sure about this. What do you think, John?
Well, if he's going to be humble, he's got to start wearing hoodies, just like Bill Belichick. I mean, even though Bill's not humble, it's like, but to say that, you know, he's tired of being humble, I mean, okay, he took a couple weeks until he got a job, and now he's, you know, is he going to start making Baker Mayfield-type comments? It's like, come on. I know you got a chip on your shoulder. You didn't get any money in free agency, but let's be real about this. Again, it was a good move for them to sign him. I mean, you took the chance in being able to take the low deal and being able to get a job, and you have a chance to get a starting job, but, you know, let's have the actions go before the words.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, you can download the podcast at 710sports.com. And a reminder, you do have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell your smart speaker to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and boom, it's a speaker. It's a radio, I should say, for you right there. Well, apparently Antonio Brown is still a topic. It's still going on. Is he really a possibility for the Seahawks? There's a host in the building who seems to think so. We'll get into that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, we'll talk about Cam Newton's fatigue with being humble. Takes a lot of energy. He's done with it. He's had it. We'll get into that coming up, but apparently, Antonio Brown seems to be a possibility for the Seahawks. We've talked about this before, but there's videos being released out there of him working out with Russell Wilson. And our very own Danny O'Neill talked about this morning. And not that he's the ultimate authority, but Danny covers the Seahawks very close to the team. Here's his takeaway from what's been going on.
I think acquiring him fits with the approach that Pete and John have generally taken. And I mean that in this sense, that hey, they don't excuse guys from their mistakes. They don't try to say, yeah, you know what, it wasn't that big a deal. But they do like to give people second chances. I don't know if the nature of some of the things he's been accused of and some of the public behavior, like you mentioned on Instagram, but then there's also been actual complaints against him for sexual assault or improprieties. Nothing's been proven. I don't know if how that factors into their decision, but the idea of giving a guy a second chance, they've had some success doing that. Sometimes it's bit him in the butt, but they've had a fair amount of success and coming in and saying, okay, you know what? You've got one chance here. You don't get any latitude. Like if there's a mistake, we're gonna part ways.
All right. So there's Danny's take on it, and two more quick sound bites here, and then we'll have you guys jump in. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, I'm with Danny on this though. Like, do you want to give people second chances or not? And I would say, you know, for people like you might need a second chance. At some point, you might do something you're not proud of, maybe in a moment of rage, whatever. But I don't know, you know, so I just wanted to get that in there because I'm with that. I agree. Now, I think this is a different situation, but, you know, people have given Michael Vick a second. I don't know if you guys have, if you've forgiven him. I see him out quite a bit and it's like he served his time for what he did and, you know, so, but it involves, you know, which we'll get to, but I mean, it involves apologizing in a really, you know, sincere way and actually showing some change. But I just, you know, I'm with Danny on the second chances.
Yeah. But it depends on how he's seeking a second chance from doing what. And that's the part that needs to be determined because he's been accused of rape and sexual assault. That's not, to me, a second chance, kind of a moment of rage, I had a bad moment. That's telling me what your character is and what kind of person you are. And if you're guilty of that, you're trash. That's what you are. And there's really no other part of that seems feasible to me, if he's guilty of it.
Yeah.
And it still needs to be determined whether he is or is not guilty of that. Those are still outstanding legal situations, which tells me it's an interesting conversation, but I don't think he's playing anywhere until that gets cleared up.
Yeah, well, and the second chance, I mean, it, of course, comes with rehabilitation. I mean, you know, absolute rehabilitation. And that's where what Michael Vick is at. So that's what I'm speaking to is that part of it, you know. And if somebody truly has, you know, mended their past and their ways, and I think most people have forgiven Michael Vick because he served time for it. And he's done some work to, you know, kind of reverse. You know, if Antonio Brown went through that same process, then, I would give him a second chance. But he's a far cry from that, isn't he?
I would say so. I'm just jotting down some notes here. And I'm surprised that this whole topic continues. And let's say you could put aside all of his supposed transgressions, and you have to use the allegedly, but boy, you use a lot of allegedlys when you're talking about Antonio Brown. But put all that aside and think about the player and how good he is. I understand that. I see why people are infatuated. They're in love with what he can do. You know, you put it on paper and you think, oh my, how could you stop the Seahawks if they had Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and Antonio Brown? Well, haven't we seen this before when you tried to work in a Percy Harvin and there were mixed results there? There was some success, but you probably would have done just as well without getting Percy Harvin. I'm almost positive you would have done better without Jimmy Graham if you'd kept Max Unger. Of course, that's 2020 hindsight, but why not learn from your past mistakes and not go in this direction or even entertain this? If I'm Russell Wilson, And I'm working out with Antonio Brown, and let's say I'm friends with him, and I like the idea of Antonio Brown joining the team. I still would have I think I would understand the pulse of what's going on out there, and I probably would say to him, hey, look, man, you know, right now I can't really be working out with you. It gives the wrong impression. I just don't get any of this, because if you brought him onto this team, if he doesn't get enough targets, he's going to be down in the dumps. He'll be like Cam Newton. He'll probably throw a towel over his head. The body language won't be good. And there's no way that he's going to be the number one receiver here, I wouldn't think. Maybe not. Maybe so. Maybe still at the age of 32. But then how does that play out with Lockett and Metcalf? How are they feeling about that? So I don't think you want to disrupt the chemistry with the wide receiver room. And I just, I know we're talking about it, but sometimes I sit there and I go, why are we talking about this? Because I just think it's far-fetched, and I doubt that Schneider would go down this road again, would he?
I don't know.
It's Danny's fault.
Well, Danny had that to say, and then Brock talked about it, said, you know, Russ working out with Brown shows the type of star that he wanted in free agency.
It's just my opinion that 2-3 years ago, we would not have seen a workout video with Russell Wilson working out with a star with a sordid past like Antonio Brown. That the league is very clear right now, they don't have answers on whether or not he's ever going to play, and last year the league shut the door in his face. And I think that was an intentional move is to make sure that, yep, you're going to see me working out with Antonio Brown and the people I'm close to and in our market that know me. I'm going to make it clear to them. And we've certainly heard a bunch from Jake on our station that, yeah, that from a football perspective, that's the kind of superstar and star talent he wants to see around him. So when that day comes, don't be surprised if we hear and see a little more vocal, a little more transparent, and maybe even just a quarterback that wants a few things done for him here in the second stage of his career.
So Brock is taking that as a message from Russell as to what he wants to see or wanted to see in the offseason, adding a weapon of that caliber. And again, Josh Gordon is not Antonio Brown, but he's a very good receiver, and if he can keep his nose clean, he would be so much more proud. He's been in this locker room. He's been through it with Pete and Russell, and he knows those guys, and by all accounts was extremely positive, and he's never been a bad teammate. He's been the victim of his wrongdoing, whereas, again, you've got serious accusations tied to Antonio Brown that have to be cleared up before I could ever say, yep, I'm all for a second chance. That's contingent on whether he's found guilty or innocent of these accusations.
Yeah, I mean, he's a long ways away from that. But, you know, for Josh Gordon, and I'll say this, I mean, the thing is people get fascinated or fixated on the fact that he is so athletic and such a great receiver. Well, so is Josh Gordon. I know there was a lot of GMs that thought, there was a GM, I'm trying to remember exactly who it was, the guy that used to be with Cleveland, I think, he said that Josh Gordon had the best workout he had ever seen. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the thing we hear all the time about Jared Kelenic with the Mariners and Scott Servais talking about the guy is incredibly wildly athletic. And again, I feel like he's contrite, and, you know, he obviously has a problem that really doesn't affect the rest of the team. I just don't see, you know, and Russ is probably talking about, okay, somebody like Antonio Brown, but I mean, what are people not getting about him? Because he's been trouble wherever he's been. So, I mean, if an Antonio Brown comes back into the league a year from now and has atoned for everything that he's done, I've changed, I'm a changed man, I would like a second chance. Yeah, but like I said, I think he's a long ways away from that.
Well, he is, and when you mention Josh Gordon, I know a lot of people are out there going, well, okay, he's only done harm to himself, and it's just marijuana. We don't know if it's just marijuana or not. If it is just marijuana, okay, bring him back. But if it's other things, and the thing is that you get so in love with a player's ability, and you think about, boy, Josh Gordon last year, all those first down catches that he had. He only had 7 catches for the Seahawks, but they seemed pretty important, most of them. And then he had that catch at Carolina that might have been the catch of the year. So you remember all that, and you forget about a guy who's been suspended 8 times. So do you bring him in again? And what's going to happen? Let's say he gets suspended after the 15th game of the year like he did last year. Well, he's letting the team down. And what makes you think that it's going to be any different this time around? So, yeah, I don't get the whole Brown or Josh Gordon discussion at all.
Well, I get it with Gordon. I mean, there's maybe a sense of fatigue and, hey, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me 7 times, really shame on me, I guess. So,
Point is, you can't get fooled.
You can't get fooled again. Yeah, something like that. But I get that, Jim. I don't think you're off in that. I'm just saying, if we're just talking about guys who have screwed up, who are ultra talented, and that's true in both cases with Brown and Gordon. Well, you have to pay attention to how they've screwed up and who is at cost outside of them and their careers. Have there been victims? Have there been others that have you know, suffered because of their transgressions. In one case, with Gordon, no, it's him. In Antonio Brown's case, it appears there are a few people. And a couple of those are really serious accusations that have to be cleared up. I'm repeating myself, but to me, there's just a night and day difference. Yeah, they're both risks. They're low risk, high reward in the sense nobody's going to offer them a boatload of money. They're going to be on probably veteran minimums with all kinds of incentives inside the contract that allow them to make money if they can keep their nose clean. But there's just a much bigger risk attached to Antonio Brown because of who he's been that we know of for a fact. And also what he's accused of on top of that is just in a different league than Gordon, in my opinion. So we'll see what happens. We brought up Cam Newton earlier, though, in the idea that he's just done with that whole humble thing. It's just not working for him. We'll tell you what we're talking about when we sweep the dial, coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
There was something that happened. I mean, nothing crazy, but I had a cameraman that was filming me after I had a bad bunker shot and whiffed the sand a little bit, which shouldn't have done. That was dumb. But at the end of the day, you know, he was literally watching me the whole entire way up, you know, after getting out of the bunker, walking up next to the green. And I just was like, sir, what is the need to watch me that long? I mean, I understand that, but it's his job to, you know, video me. But at the same point, I think we need to start protecting our players out here compared to showing, you know, a potential vulnerability and hurting someone's image. I just don't think that's necessarily the right thing to do. Not like I was going to do anything bad. It's one of those things that I hope he respects, you know, my privacy as much as we're out here performing. I think it's necessary that we have our times of privacy as well when things aren't going our way. When you're videoing someone and you catch Tiger at a bad time, you show him accidentally doing something or someone else, or, you know, they're just frustrated because they really care about the game. It can really hurt them if they catch you at a potentially vulnerable time. I'm not necessarily, we don't mean anything by it. We just care a lot about the game. And for that to damage our brand, like, that's not cool in the way we act. Because if you actually meet me in person, you know, I'm not too bad of a dude, I don't think.
Wow. That was a really long explanation there from PGA Tour golfer Bryson DeChambeau explaining why he had a spat with a cameraman on Saturday. He was angry with a shot that he had just hit, didn't think it was right that the cameraman was so focused on him. Jim, perhaps you know, you were watching, I don't know, was he in the lead often, or he's amongst the leaders? Generally, they're going to follow the leaders and break down everything that goes on. I didn't realize that the expectation from players was that you only focus on my victories and my great shots and don't pay any attention to what I don't do well.
He took a lot of heat for that. Yeah, he lost his temper in one of the bunkers. I didn't see it in particular, but I heard about it and read about it, and there were people out there saying, hey, you know, maybe if you behave a little better, then they won't be catching you in the act on something like that. But DeChambeau is the big story on the PGA Tour right now because he bulked up in the off season and he's gained like 30 or 40 pounds. Bob and Dave, he averaged 351 yards in his drives on his drives this week at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, and he won by 3 shots. His last seven, I know this isn't the golf show, but the golf show will be back at 9 a.m. on Saturday. His last 7 starts, he's tied for 5th, 2nd, 4th, tied for 3rd, tied for 8th, tied for 6th, and then won the Rocket Mortgage Classic. So there might be a new thing, a new trend in golf with a lot of guys bulking up and eating a lot and trying to get more distance to keep up with Bryson DeChambeau, who is now, he's overtaken Rory McIlroy as the Masters favorite. And Dave, I know how much you enjoy the Masters and the music and everything, so I wanted to point that out to you.
Sounds like he's crushing the ball. I just instantly, I always will side, like, how obnoxious was the cameraman about it, though? You know, I mean, was he over the top? I always take the side of the athlete, so I was just sitting here thinking, what if a cameraman had run on the field right after I missed a tackle? Why'd you miss that tackle? Put the camera right in my face.
But I don't think they're being interviewed. I think they're just there. If he was amongst the leaders, then yeah, you're going to get the bulk of the coverage. That's just how it goes, good or bad.
I didn't think he was interviewed. I just, like, if they go and stick the camera in your face and they're waiting for you to make, you know, some kind of move and you're irritated at that time, I can understand that. I mean, he's out there competing. And so that's kind of, you know, you get fired up out there.
Some things change, some remain the same.
75 on Dr. Bond, a world record. 75.
Unofficial 75.
75.
And that you would be a record. George Shea, the unofficial 75 hot dogs and buzz. Joey Chestnut, your 13 time now.
Just
Nathan's famous champion.
The pace is unbelievable. He just keeps driving.
Joey Chestnut does it again. The Nathan's hot dog eating contest takes place every 4th of July. This year they did it without the huge crowds. They get out there in Coney Island in the sweltering heat. They still held the competition, and he beat his own record. 75 hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes. Unbelievable.
And buns.
I don't think I could eat 75 hot. Yeah, yeah. 10 minutes. I couldn't
That's
do that
ridiculous.
In a year.
Yeah. Well, I'm disgusted by this. I really, watching those guys do that, it's almost, they're like a snake. You know, when you see on those nature shows where a snake will like swallow this huge animal and then it'll slowly try to work it down its gullet yeah. and down into its stomach with its muscle. That's kind of what that reminds me of, watching those guys eat those things. It's just, it's just gross to me.
Says the guy who eats bacon-wrapped hot dogs at T-Mobile Park.
Oh, I missed those bacon-wrapped hot dogs, man. They were right outside of Edgar's. They were so good. But, Jim, I would maybe have two, not 75.
How many could you eat in 10 minutes?
In 10 minutes? Oh, gosh. Probably, if I was really hungry, maybe four.
Really? In 10? That's pretty good, man. I couldn't do that.
Come on. If somebody offered you like $5,000 to eat as many hot dogs as you could in 10 minutes, you couldn't put down six or eight of them?
I'd throw up. I don't think I could hold them down. And those are the
rules.
You're not allowed to throw up.
I just get a kick out. I love the whole Joey Chestnut story. I watched the 30 for 30 over the weekend with Kobayashi and the rivalry that the two had. And I get a kick out of guys like Peter King. You see what he said on Twitter?
No.
He said, ESPN celebrates the birthday of our country by airing a gluttonous, vomitous, and grotesque event. Eating is not a sport. Competitive eating is a sin. Come on, Peter. Loosen up, man. I mean, I think it's kind of fun. What the heck? It's not for everybody. And, yeah, that's part of the appeal. It is disgusting, but I sit there and watch it anyway.
Could you eat eight in 10 minutes?
I'd give a hell if somebody offered me $5,000.
I'm not asking would you try. I'm saying what realistically, how many could you eat and keep down in 10 minutes?
I think I could get eight hot dogs down.
Really? That's pretty good, man.
I'm guessing. I don't know if I could or not. I mean, I boast about a lot of stuff that I'm not capable of, but what the heck? I'd give it a shot with hot dogs.
Whoa, wait a minute. We need to make sure you save that audio, DJ. I boast about a lot of things I'm not very good at, like pool and horse. And
hey, horse, pong, horse and I am good at.
Beer guzzling
I am good at. But, you know, it sounds like Moyer's a Hall of Fame chugger. So I don't think I'm Hall of Fame, but, you know, I'm a coug, so I can chug beers.
DJ, how many hot dogs could you eat in 10 minutes?
Two.
That's probably where I'm at. I honestly, again, you have to keep them down. That's the key to this whole thing. I don't think I could do three.
Do you like hot dogs?
I don't hate them, but I don't love them. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I think
you feel like you have to have one when you go to a baseball game? It's no. like you have to have a margarita when you go to a Mexican place.
No,
yeah, you're obligated to have a hot dog. No question about it. Bacon wrapped, if possible.
You don't choose that over there. I'm really a model. I'm saying this. I'm getting tired of being humble now.
That's Cam Newton no longer being humble, everybody. He kept it in check for all these years, and he's now unleashed his less than humble self, I guess. I don't know what he was referring to when he said you chose that instead of this, pointing to himself. I'm not sure who that is, who he's pointing to, but the gloves are off. Cam Newton has been humble all these years and no longer. So enjoy the new version of Cam.
Well, it sounded like he was kind of trying to be funny there a little bit, maybe. And maybe it's something you say, like Jim boasting about things that he can't do. Jim is no longer being humble. He's going to tell you, I'll beat you in a beer chugging or pool or horse or whatever. It kind of sounded like more playful because I expected when I read this, because I hadn't heard it, that, yeah, he doesn't come off as
well. There was a video. This was on Instagram, and he didn't look like he was laughing. Like, hey, I'm just, you know, the elbow, just messing with you guys. He seemed like it was kind of serious.
Yeah, when I think of a humble guy, I think of a guy like Dan Wilson, the former Mariner. I've never thought of Cam Newton. I thought, yeah, what a humble guy he is. So I just was amused by that.
Yeah. All right, there you go. Coming up, is it possible that we're going to see Antonio Brown out here? We'll ask Michael Bumpus about that. We'll get into everything else with him, too. But just see what his reaction is to what Danny and Brock had to say. Bumpus joins us next year with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.